Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, tomorrow is Africa Day, so fitting that we look at what Edmund de Rothschild, who recently raised a whole lot of private equity capital to invest in the continent, considers the last continent of structural growth and why the African Continental Free Trade Area is so exciting. A pity about the acronym, which is AFCTA, I think. Anyway, the Continental Free Trade Area is going to cover a market of roughly 1.2 billion people. We've got a GDP combined of 2.5 trillion US dollars, and that's across all 55 member states of the AU. And as I said earlier on in the show, if you look at it in terms of numbers of participating countries, the free trade area is going to be the world's largest free trade zone since the formation of the World Trade Organization. So if that doesn't excite you, I don't know what will. But what needs to be done to ensure that this doesn't just become another AU pipe dream? Well, I'm joined now by Marie Wilker, Strategy and Communication Consulting Head at Africa Practice. Marie, welcome.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much. It's good to join you. I must apologize for the minute you got back. Sorry.
Just a bit of a delay, but we understand, coming to you from East Africa, I believe. Closer to home, we've got Dr. Martin Davies, MD of Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte. Martin, always good to chat.
Yeah, hey, Michael, good to be back.
Now, when we look at this, kick us off, Martin, the African Continental Free Trade Area obviously presents some massive opportunities. How do you view this, so that it doesn't become just another pipe dream for the African Union? Is this a reality in the making, or is it too much pie, too high in the sky?
Look, I think, Mike, I think it's great. It's great rhetoric. It makes for good news. The potential, the word we always use, is always there. Of course, Africa is a large, sizable region, but I think often, most importantly, the implementation of this very sweeping, wide sort of wide-ranging agreement will be hamstrung by poor infrastructure, which ultimately is very inflationary in terms of moving goods around. Secondly, the bureaucracies and at times, I think, political internal wranglings of countries, which were ultimately inclined towards protectionism. I think countries like Nigeria, amongst others. And I think thirdly, ultimately, already these regions or these countries, more accurately in Africa, aren't really producing what their neighbors want anyway. And which comes first? The ultimate paradox, is it the making the products for a market, or how do we start to deepen the credit value chain, a value-added type sector, i.e. industrialize, and then you'll boost intra-regional growth and development? Is it the policy issue, or is it the value chain issue? I think we're thinking too much about the policy when we don't have the competitive private sectors we need to create the goods that can be exported in the first place.
Very important point that, Marie. Apologies, I think you in Botswana, looking at the dialing code in front of me now, not East Africa. Anyway, the line is a little bit delayed. Marie, what do you see as the key structural impediments that need to be overcome in order to see this African Continental Free Trade Area become a reality?
Thanks, Michael. I think what we're seeing at the moment is it's already much more than what many experts expected when the agreement was announced a few years back. It was a very ambitious timeline that we've been looking at. And I think with the meeting in March, with the launch of this agreement, particularly pushed by Rwandan President Paul Kagame, we've seen quite an ambitious agenda on the side of African governments, and I think that is really what needs to be maintained in order to make this agreement a reality. At the same time, I think we also have to be realistic, and if we look at what is currently on the table, we see that we have a great agreement that comes with all the different principles that need to be in place to make African intercontinental trade a reality, but we don't have the details on the table yet. So this is a bit technical, but I'll try to break it down. What we're seeing is that governments have committed to treating trade in a certain way, but they haven't yet said what trade they mean. And they've said that they will endeavor to liberalize 90% of the tariff lines across the continent. But that can very quickly mean that only about 10% of the trade is actually liberalized. And that is a consequence of the trade realities that we currently see on the continent. African governments, African countries still trade very little with each other. It's about 15% of all the trade coming out of Africa. That's far below standard worldwide. But we also see that there are very few products being traded across the continent. So if governments are now eager to maintain these and to protect their industries, the agreement could end up having no real use. So I think in terms of really making this agreement a success, we need to see the ambition continue. We need to see governments being eager to make a continental vision a reality where each and every country can play a role. And then after that comes the long road of implementation where we see many other elements coming in. And for that, the African Union has already put into place interesting and very important side agreements, such as a broader action plan for intra-African trade that tackles issues such as trade facilitation. It tackles issues such as productive capacity development. But again, here, we need to see the implementation and not just the word on paper.
And that, for me, is the absolute key here, Martin. As you mentioned earlier, what I see across the African continent, as we know, Africa is not a country. We see a range of countries from very large and more developed to those that are far smaller, far less developed. So there's a great deal that needs to be done to ensure that we all benefit from a win-win free trade area and we don't see some of the regional hegemons come in and dominate.
Yeah, I mean, very much we talk about African economies, but predominantly there's maybe three or four which really are the anchor economies you refer to, Michael. It's South Africa, it's Kenya, it's Nigeria, and it's Angola. Now, beyond those four, you're going to find typically, Rwanda being an exception, the smaller minor states, arguably, are they economically viable to begin with, will have far greater protectionist tendencies. It's just ironic, however, the two sort of bookends of sub-Saharan Africa, think Nigeria, South Africa. Nigeria did not attend this summit in March and in Rwanda, and South Africa is not ratified. Arguably, we stand to gain the greatest benefit. So I think, again, it's a great, you know, great initiative, and I'm very pro-free trade, you know, generally, but or very liberalized trade. But I think we need to see the devils in the detail more accurately, the devils in the implementation. And I'd like to see South Africa really leading the charge on this. And I don't think, in this case, we're up to speed.
And certainly business can help shape the implementation as well. I mean, it's a tool for private enterprise in Africa. So business really needs to come to the table to start thinking of the way it can help shape some of those new trade linkages and policies and develop those partnerships as well. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. Very packed show with a lot of earnings out today. Thank you very much to Dr. Martin Davies, MD of Emerging Markets and Africa at Deloitte, and Marie Wilker, Strategy and Communication Consulting Head at Africa Practice from Botswana, on a bit of a delayed line. And that's a wrap for tonight. Thank you for listening to Classic Business with me, Michael Avery, Carolyn Stain, up next with Classic Cocktail Hour. Good night.